Hi, you are listening to the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. This podcast is for policymakers, governments, researchers, students, businesses, and anyone that is interested in conflict and development issues in Africa. On this podcast, we hear from experts from across Africa and the world. Your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa, will ask the questions you would want answers to. Michael Wangpa has an extensive experience spanning over a decade studying, researching, writing, and consulting on conflict and development issues in Africa.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa. Today I'm joined by two good friends and colleagues. They're very special guests, Malik Samuel and Idris Mohammed. Malik is a Nigerian-based senior researcher at the Good Governance Africa and former researcher at the Institute for Security Studies. And is also an investigative journalist. Idris Mohammed is also an investigative journalist. He's worked with USIP, and he's currently a violent conflict researcher and currently a PhD candidate at the University of Alabama Graduate School, Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Gentlemen, I'm happy to have you guys join me today to discuss the new terrorist group in Nigeria, the Lakurawa, and I look forward to an exciting interaction between us. Okay, let me start off with so this question you're both going to answer, but I'll start off with Samuel. Samuel's joined us. Who are the Lakurawa group?
Thank you for having me, Dr. Michael. The Lakurawa group, which the Nigerian authorities have, they call them a terrorist group. It's a group of different nationalities, not Nigerian, not necessarily Nigerian, but made up of people from the Sahel, from Mali, Niger, another part of the Sahel, who have been in the northwest part of the country for a very long time. At least they had been in Nigeria for at least 6 years. So I wonder why the military is just making it public about their presence, giving the public the impression that it's a new group. No, it's not a new group. In fact, this group, the Lakurawas, were people that were actually invited by community members affected by insecurity caused by banditry. So years back, as a result of the absence of the state in these areas to protect people from bandits, these Lakurawa guys, you know, got invited by villagers, you know, to come and protect them against bandits, and they did that for some time before they were dislodged, you know, by security forces. And I think after about 3-4 years, then they tried to stage a comeback, which resulted in the press release by the Nigerian military calling them a new terrorist group.
Idris, let me come to you. Where are these Lakurawas? Where are they based? Where do they operate? And why are we just hearing about them? As Samuel just, Malik just said, they've been in Nigeria for the last 6 years. Why are we just hearing about them?
To be honest, I was laughing when I see the press release from the military. It was really, really shocking and surprising at the same time. I was asking myself, so how do I know about this Lakurawa operation while military is now they are doing press release to inform the general public in Nigeria about the Lakurawa? Because I know Lakurawa since 2018. And they have been operating in the areas of Tangaza, you know, Binji, and some other part of Kebbi State. And to be surprising, these people are foreigners. Then I don't know now. I can tell you that there is no any Nigerian among them. In fact, nobody understands their language because they are not speaking English. They are not speaking French. They are not speaking Arabic. They are speaking some sort of, I think, a local language, either in Burkina Faso or Mali. And they sought to be like too secretive. They love, you know, staying in one place. They don't intervene or interrupt in people's affairs, but still there are transactions between them and the local communities. So how I categorize them in 2019, when I returned back to Tangaza a year after I saw them, I look at them as like Ansaru group in Kaduna State, particularly in Giwa and Benue Valley part of the state. What I realized that what they are doing, they are busy trying to establish their base by, you know, building trust with the public, you know, try to sell out, try to let the public, you know, about their existence. But the language barrier, that what become an issue between them and the local communities there. And the security were fully aware. The traditional leaders were aware of their presence. I could remember, I had even discussion with a traditional leader about why can't you, you know, inform security about these people? They are carrying guns. They are not Nigerians. They are, you know, in hundreds. Can't you think like one day they will resort to violence and start killing you guys? He said, no, these people are even providing protection for us. Bandits are no longer coming to our places because of their presence, even though they don't have, they didn't have any combat, physical combat with the bandit, but their presence, you know, sending a strong signal to the bandit that these people might, you know, overpower them when they try to like invade our communities. But I have saw this. I know these people do not have any good intentions staying in the community. They try to recruit young people to join them, but they don't have, you know, the capacity like Boko Haram, you know, to mobilize people to join them. But they are not Nigerians. They are mostly from Burkina Faso and Mali. I don't know much about whether Niger joined them, but these two countries, Burkina Faso and Mali, they are mostly from there. If you could remember some years back, I think, is it 2016 or 2017, Buhari made a statement when the Nigerian took that his statement as phony, when he was saying that, you know, the current insecurity in the Northwest was a result of, you know, the demise of Gaddafi, and people were laughing because people don't know, you know, what happened along Niger border with Nigeria. Niger has eight states, and out of that estate, Niger share five states with Nigeria, and thus, you know, states, you know, they are terrible to Nigeria. You know, the porous borders, there a lot of criminals, organized crimes, you know, and a lot of terror groups that are, you know, wallowing and going around those areas unchecked, unchallenged. And that is what is the major security threat, you know, to the existence of Nigeria.
You did mention something. I think it was Sam Malik that mentioned it, that these people came on the invitation of the traditional rulers that invited them. So I think this relates also to, we've heard, I think he was the former governor of Kaduna, is he Nasser El-Rufai, during the bandit time when it was El-Rufai and another traditional ruler said they were going to invite Fulani militias or from other countries to come and fight the thing. So I want to look at this. Does this fit in into where elites, you know, try to use the arm and empower, you know, people for their own? So in this case, now it's different. Now we're not talking about elections or winning elections, but when you arm these people and then you militarize them and then they end up becoming a burden to you. Does that fit into that narrative?
I can't
Okay, go on, Idris. Yeah.
Okay. I can't say that because there is no evidence to show that. But I can tell you that is why I told you Lakura are like Ansaru. If you could remember, Ansaru too were also invited by the community. It is because of the failure of the state to provide the security for the people. That is why security are looking for alternative. If you could remember, when Ansari come to Damari in part of the Renungwari axis, they were not violent, they are not doing anything. But because they come with their arms, they are going to the mosques, they are going to marketplaces, mobilizing people to join them. That is why the community leaders sees that as an opportunity for them to invite them. Since we are living here, and you know these bandits are killing us every day, and government refuses to do anything, let's just invite these people to come and help us by providing the security. We too, we can provide them with whatsoever they want. I think that's the same scenario that is going on in Kebbi and Sokoto State as Lakura, you know, taking over some part of the rural communities. But issue of elites, you know, whether we like it or not, politics play a key role in this kind of thing. But I don't think, or I don't have any evidence to back any argument that, elites engage in recruiting those guys to come and, you know, partake in this kind of criminal acts.
Malik, let me ask you. So this, you're on the ground. So these people, as Idris said, Malik, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah. As Idris said, he said these people are either from like Burkina Faso and Mali, and then he talk about the language barrier. But I've also heard somewhere where they say they speak Fukude and Arabic, and also that they link to the Islamic State in the Greater Sahara. How true are these narratives?
About the language they speak. Yes, we've heard the same thing, that they speak Arabic. They also, some of them also speak French, and some speak Fufute as the Fulani language. Yes, but in terms of linkages with the Islamic State, I've not seen any proof of that. Even though their modus operandi is not too different from what ISWAP, from what the Islamic State tries to do, which is to win the hearts and minds of communities, to try and offer protection, offer services to the people in exchange for taxation or extortion or whatever. It's the same thing the Lakurawa group does, by providing security for the people against the bandit. The people are expected in return to pay the mandatory zakat or whatever levy that these guys place, you know, place on them. So you see that it's a bit similar to what ISWAP, the Islamic State of Africa province, does in the northeast Nigeria. But to say they are linked, to say they have some sort of relationship, I haven't seen that. I haven't seen any proof, you know, of that. People I've spoken to have also not been able to confirm any linkages, between the Lakurawa group and the Islamic State West Africa province.
Idris, you mentioned the fall of Gaddafi in 2011, and you know, in our research in Boko Haram, we've talked about how that, you know, inspired, or the influence of that on the rise of Boko Haram and the rest. So again, we've seen what's going on in the Sahel in the last year or so with alliance of Sahel states and the coups in this place and the breakdown in the regional multinational joint task force, the G5 Sahel. Now, with this, now how does it compound insecurity in the region? And then again, I'm looking at in terms of the Nigerian, now this will require more regional effort. Looking at the Lakurawa is cross border. They kind of like, I want to believe it's cross, but it's not just working in operating in Nigeria alone. So how is Nigeria going to deal with it? And how does the event in the Sahel with the Alliance of Sahel, how does it complicate the fight against this group?
So Let me just take you back to the history when you look at the demise of Gaddafi and how, you know, some local communities start seeing the signs of insecurity in those areas. If you remember, Gaddafi recruited people from different parts of African countries to join him in the fight against, you know, his intruders then for him to remain in power. And after Gaddafi was killed, you know, those guys dispersed to different parts of Africa, unchecked. They are not registered, they are not documented, and nobody knew where they came from. And we have significant number of Nigerian citizens and Nigerian citizens, particularly from Zamfara and Sokoto, who joined that fight, and they returned back to Nigeria, you know, unchecked. Nobody know where they are. And when, you know, the son of Gaddafi and other top military personnel during Gaddafi's administration, they came to border with Niger Republic, they dumped some of their arsenals there, you know, they remained in that forest, and some of the armed groups also, you know, had encounter with them, took some of the arms group, and took some of the arms and ammunitions there. And I could remember in the border with Nigeria and Katsina, there were communities then where you can just walk in there with small, you know, amount of money and you get weapon, you get ammunitions, you know, things, a lot of things were going there. I think that was the reason why Buhari was busy trying to shut the border then, you know, saying on the issue of, you know, they want to increase local protection and some other thing. But wasn't true. Around 2012 to 14, 15, there were a lot of criminal and terror-related activities happening along the border with Katsina, Sokoto, Kebbi, you know, all those states that share border with Niger Republic. And this become a serious threat to the regional effort, not only Nigeria, particularly the West African countries that are trying, you know, to put hands together against terror. Related threat in their regions. And this has become a serious terror now because it led to the issue of, you know, even though there is multinational joint task force try to put the things in order, but the decline of intelligence gathering, you know, and, you know, the political instability in some other West African countries, for example, Niger, Burkina Faso, you know, and Mali, you know, and some other countries that are not even West Africa, like Algeria and some others, you know, has really affected the regional effort to contain these terror, you know, related issues in the region. And when you look at Niger, people are undermining Niger when it comes to the terror. Niger share border with many countries, and Niger is always playing significant key role, you know, in counterterrorism effort, looking at, you know, the border it shares with so many countries, and it has a very large, you know, landmark, and that become, you know, a fertile ground for this group, you know, to establish and remain there unchecked and unchallenged. And it has kept, you know, bringing a lot of issues into Nigeria and some other West African countries that are trying to contend the terror in their own home countries. So our major concern is the porous borders. Like I said, recently, last 4 months, I was at the border community with Nigeria in Sokoto State, and I found a community with over 600 porous borders. And you know, when you try to look at all those things, where and how you can mount policing or police or any other form of security to mount these borders, which practically not possible, looking at the number of police, military, customs, immigration, and other security agencies that work at the border.
Idris, I'll come back to you on two issues, the porous border issue and also Ansaru and the help of Ansaru with the Bible. But let me go to Samuel. Samuel, what is the scope of the Lakurawas in Nigeria? When I say scope, I mean, what is numbers? What is the numbers and what is their geographical spread as well, in terms of numbers and their geographical spread?
For numbers, I don't know if there's any accurate answer to that. I believe they should be in their in a few hundreds, less than, I would say less than 500. And they primarily operate, or I would say operated, because they are almost now been pushed out of the Northwest, given the military operations that is ongoing. So, but they predominate they operated more in Sokoto State. I think predominantly around three local government. But I think recently, a month or so ago, it was reported that they killed 15 people in Kebbi State, which also means they had an interest there. There is no Lakurawa camp in Kebbi State right now. They only went there to rustle cattle or something, and then the vigilantes from the community went after them, and which resulted in the fight and the casualty. But predominantly, they operated in Sokoto State. But the risk of it, of this, is that, you know, the how easy the movement, Idris rightly talked about the borders, the open borders, the movement. So the fact that they are based in Sokoto State does not restrict them there. They can easily go to Zamfara State. They can easily go to Katsina State. They can easily cross over to this other neighboring countries, you know, and all that. But in Nigeria, they operated more in Sokoto State.
Idris, let me follow up on what Samuel was saying and what you were saying before. And I think the way I see these things, or the way it's coming, you know, in the first stage of Boko Haram, you know, a lot of some of my colleagues would want to hold religious ideology to be the, and I've always just said, you know, now in looking at it, I see religion has become secondary. And with the Lakurawa, as we've seen where they say they are now telling people, you know, you need to pray, you need to do this. But from what we are seeing, even when with Boko Haram, Astri Boko Haram started becoming more like a criminal organization, and with Sekau trying to take out the spoils of the war and the infighting that has led to, you know, this breakage. So if I look at Ansaru, so there's a paper that James, I know you know James Barnett and Mortala, not the other Mortala, there's a paper they submitted to a book that I'm editing. And they were talking about how this issue in the Sahel is going to lead to what we're seeing now with the Lakurawa, like more groups coming into from all of this into Nigeria, and how it's going to complicate regional efforts. But let me talk about Ansaru. You mentioned Ansaru in one of your previous statements, that Ansaru was invited. But we've also seen where, in that paper that I was mentioning, we talk about ISWAP also tried to come into the Northwest. People are trying to gain foothold with the Northwest and form allegiance or alliance with the bandits in the. What can you say about that situation in trying to? So I'm thinking there's more criminal. Criminalization of all these ideological, so-called ideological groups have been criminalized. Or just take a broad outlook into it. What's going on in the Northwest with this interaction between criminal bandit groups? On one hand, they say they are fighting bandit groups. On the other hand, you see some kind of criminal enterprise between the bandit groups and so-called Islamic groups. What can you say about that?
So before we even go there, apart from Lakura, I can tell you there are other two groups in the Northwest, and nobody know their names. I know. And this group, they are not, you know, violent also. They are not also Nigerians. So that is why I keep talking about Boda, because that's the major issue. So coming back to the issue of Ansaru, ISWAP, and Boko Haram, if you realize, even before the demise of Shekau, he tried his very best, you know, to expand his network, you know, by recruiting bandits into his network. But he couldn't, and he failed to do so. The same thing with Mamanur also. Mamanur also tried his effort to do that, but it wasn't work. Also, Khalid al-Barnawi, when he came to Kaduna State, also he tried his very best to see how he bring Dogo, Jide, Shahu, and so many others, you know, gang leaders along Benin Gwari to come and join him, but they failed to do so. So all of them, you know, they are struggling to bring Northwest into their own network because networks, you know, Northwest is a very big region in the country and has the highest population. And when it comes to the economic indices, you know, there are a lot of things to say, which I don't like to even mention them here. So that is why they are seen as an opportunity for them to bring this region into their own network so that they will expand their, you know, terror network into the country. But I can tell you all they failed to do so. There is no any linkages between bandits to Boko Haram, ISWAP, or any other group. Even Ansaru that comes to the Northwest find it very difficult, you know, to expand their network because they tried to bring Dogo, Jide, and so many others, you know, into their network. They failed to do so. They come through Malam Musa, who is in Damari, and so many other leaders that are in Ansaru who try their very best to bring all these bandit leaders into negotiation, but they failed to do so. And that's what's resolved, I think, to the to the first encounter, I think, in 2022, where over 16, you know, bandits were killed. And still, there are a lot of counter and encounter between the bandit and Ansaru in those communities, particularly in Shahu, Kwasa Kwasa, Kwadaga, Birnungwari, Kuyello, and many other communities. So I think the same thing I can say with Lakurawa. Lakurawa, up to now, I can't relate, or I can't link Lakura with religious ideology or ISWAP or any other group. Because I know sometimes, you know, when new terror groups comes in like this, many researchers will try to link them with that. I can remember how I suffered battling with so many people when, you know, bandits become popular. People are trying to see bandits, they are trying to expand to the Osman Danfodio jihadism. This one will say bandits recruited by Islamic leaders in the Northwest, they want to depopulate Christian. A lot of narratives from different researchers just trying to sell out their own idea, you know, by trying to showcase we are on the top of the situation by the side. But I can tell you that I can't see any link between them with any other group. And this will not, you know, stop the fact that they might have the link, but for now, no any linkages.
Malik, let's talk about the Nigerian response. So there's this typical that Nigerian response is like very reactive, and from what Idris have said now, you know, we don't see any kind of like ideological link, and then again, but this group have been criminalized and being proscribed as a terrorist group. Whereas from what you and Idris say, we see this is more a case of bad governance. This is it. So why is the government taking a reactive approach? Why do you think, what should they have done? Because I would think more intelligence, from what Idris have said, that we have, this group have been lying fallow for years. So what is the state of our intelligence response to issues, and why do we always prefer the militarized response to that? What do they seek to benefit from it?
First, I'd like to respond to the comment by Chris about regarding the link between bandits and the violent extremist group, especially those from the north and from the northeast. Yes, they may not be permanent linkages, but there are some linkages, especially where it benefits both parties. For instance, before Shekau died, way before he died, I think as far back as 2019-2020, he successfully had some established connection with bandits through his commander called Sadiku, who is now based in Niger State. So Sadiku had been in the region way before, you know, before Shekau died, and he has continued staying in the region and of course, reporting to the new JAS leader, who is Bakura Doro. So, and if you look at the Kankara abduction, yes, a lot of people said the abduction was carried out by bandits. Yes, it was carried out by bandits. But then how did JAS, Shekau, come into the picture by having, by taking credit, you know, for this? It shows you some sort of connection. You look at the train attack, Kaduna, the Abuja Kaduna train attack, which was clearly a collaboration between bandits and JAS, the Sadiku guys, where they made over 1 billion naira from that. So I believe, and there's evidence to show that there are some linkages, especially because the criminality in the northeast, in the northwest rather, I look at it more from the perspective of organized crime that these violent extremist groups are trying to feed into, are trying to take advantage of, you know. So that is on the side. But now when you talk about the response, Nigeria's response, it's largely, like you correctly mentioned, it's been reactionary instead of being proactive. This is not just in the north, in the northwest. We've seen it in the northeast. We've seen it in the southeast. We've seen it in the southwest. And the problem is not that of intelligence. The Nigerian, I keep telling people that Nigeria has a very, very good intelligence gathering mechanism. Maybe because I am privy to that, the SSS does excellent job in terms of intelligence gathering. The DMI, the Directorate of Military Intelligence, does a lot of intelligence gathering. The problem, the way I see it, is about collaboration between the different agencies, between the different security agencies. Do they talk to each other? Do they share intelligence? Do they work together? That is a question that I think they alone, you know, can answer. If you remember the train attack, the Abuja Kaduna train attack, it later emerged that there was an intelligence report about the attack, that that attack was going to happen, that it might happen, but it was shared. So why was nothing done about that? You look at the Kuje prison break. It was also revealed later that there was intelligence report. Even the House of Reps, the Nigerian House of Reps, also had an investigative hearing where it was stated that there was not one, not two reports, you know, about the likelihood of an attack on that facility, but it was nothing was done to prevent it. So the problem, I don't think, is intelligence gathering. The problem, I think, is the utilization of that intelligence. And I think Nigeria does not realize that military action cannot solve this and cannot solve a problem like this. I don't think it has worked. I think it hasn't worked in many places where using military approach to solve the problem of insecurity or violent extremism, you know. But here, for political reasons, the fact that we bury our heads in the sand like the ostrich and pretend nothing is happening, but when things then blow up, then we you know. To quell the crisis. And the reason why that has not worked is because we keep scratching the surface using this military approach. Because without dealing with the root causes, without understanding the root causes of this crisis, of this conflict, the violent extremism, the criminality, we need to be looking at the root causes. And the security agents are not in a position to deal to address the root causes, you know, of this crisis. The governments, the political leaders, the politicians, you know, are the ones in a better position to deal, to look at the root causes, because the root causes are governance issues. Lack of employment, you know, the lack of provision of basic amenities, you know, the absence of the state in remote communities, you know. So these are issues that, and this is why when groups like the Lakurawas that we're talking about now, when groups like Ansaru, like ISWAP, or even JAS go to communities, it is easy for them to win over the people. because the least they can do is to guarantee their livelihoods. Once they guarantee their livelihoods, the people have no choice than to, you know, than to listen to them, than to obey them or follow whatever directive they give. You know, so I think the military approach should not, it shouldn't be our de facto response to problems of insecurity. We should be looking deeper. We should be looking at the first understanding why these things are happening, the root causes, dealing with the root causes.
Before we come to the last question, I'll give Idris opportunity to respond to you. And I think, again, I agree with you. And in one of the papers that I'm doing, we talked about inter-agency rivalry. And I'm glad you mentioned that. The problem is not so much about not having it's the inter-agency rivalry that also affected, I think, in 2011-12, they had a joint task force that was really, really effective in pushing Boko Haram back. But then there was inter-agency rivalry between the Navy, the military, the this, and that sets the fight back. So I agree with you 100%. But I'll give, also when you talked about the connections, I'll give Idris, because Idris and I were to write a paper 4 years ago, actually 3 years ago, about this the same connections. So Idris, how do you respond to that, to what Malik has said, before we come to the last questions?
Let me talk about the connection. Even though there are some things that I may not like to talk here because of, you know, sensitivity of some other issues. But I could remember when I was in Operation Safe Corridor, when we did the second reintegration of ex-client. At Giwa Barrack, there was a senior Boko Haram, which I threw discussion to him about their collaboration with other violent or organized group in the Northwest region. He said that Northwest is one of the most difficult, you know, fertile ground for them to embed. Despite it is fertile ground, they see all the chances. But the behavior of some actors there, you know, become a serious challenge for them to work with them, because even though they try, you know, so many times to bring in people from the Northwest to the Northeast, to send their own people and also invite them to come to their meeting, but they fail to agree on so many times because they too, they want to also establish themselves and become very powerful and threats, like the so-called late Sheikh or others. And so when Malik talk about, you know, the linkages when it comes to the attack on the train, how are we sure Yusuf Anka is here? No problem. I can disagree with you on that, but there are so many other factors in this story. There are so many untold stories regard to that, you know, issue. People think like Boko Haram because people are underrating bandit in that particularly Dogojide. People are underrating, you know, Dogojide, what he can do. That is why people are thinking like Dogojide cannot carry out that, you know, trend attack alone without the help of Boko Haram or any other terror group, not knowing that that person is worse than even other some top commandant of ISWAP, not only Boko Haram. And when you talked about, you know, the Gankara boys, I could remember I'm among the first three people that report the abduction of Gankara boys. And I could remember when that time I faced a lot of threat from the Kasama State government because I'm from that community. And, you know, the government wasn't always happy with the way we talk about this insecurity and some other things. But Sheikh Aw, what I can say, Sheikh Aw just tried to take glory by any means. And Sheikh Aw didn't play a significant role in that abduction. What Sheikh Aw does is, when he heard about the abduction, he reached out to the people because he already had contact with them, said he can help in negotiation. That's what Sheikh Aw did. He wanted just to help them in negotiating with the Nigerian government for them to get more money. And trying to do that, Sheikh Al just took the glory that he facilitated everything in the abduction. And if you could remember, even when they arrested one of them in Jibia, he said Sheikh Al has no hand in that abduction. They did the abduction, but you know, the propaganda by terror groups, you know, and some other things, they always want to show the world that they are, you know, stronger, you know, they are on top of the game, you know. That is what is playing out. But I'm sorry, Malik, you know, maintain my point that even if there are linkages not as strong as the way some, you know, analysts are trying to throw in. Yeah, I know there are a lot of meetings, a lot of conversation, but in terms of facilitation, you know, I don't think something such happened.
I agree with the both of you. I think there's still linkages. So yeah. it's just the degree and the scope of the linkage, whether they are, you know, significant or insignificant. But unfortunately, I wish we had more time. I, like Riley said, it is the untold stories, and I'm sure we have other opportunities, and even in our planned write-up, which I will invite Samuel as well. We'll do a couple of and tell the stories. It is our responsibility, even against all threat, to tell those stories. You know. So we
Samuel is a good writer. I think Samuel.
Yes, we will. After this, I would arrange another personal meeting. We will talk about how we would tell the stories. But in the meantime, I'll give each of you 2 minutes. I'll start with Malik to just round up to say, how do you see the Lakura group? How do you see this unfolding moving forward? The Nigerian government is dealing with a lot of groups and insecurities. So how will it deal with this moving forward? Same question to you, but Mali, go first. 2 minutes. And
I think the government will revert to, which already is happening. In fact, as we speak, the Lakura group has been dislodged in virtually all the communities where they're present, because there's a heavy military operation, you know, going on. A lot of their fighters have been killed, and also their cattle, you know, taken away from them by security forces. So the way I see this playing out is that, yes, the government will push them out, but so long as the vulnerabilities remain, now I'm talking about these communities where these guys operate. So long as these communities exist, the vulnerabilities exist. You know, we may be in the next 2, 3, 4, 5, even 10 years. In 10 years' time, these guys may come back. Now that talks, that leads me to what should be done. I think irrespective of the political difference between Nigeria and Niger and the Sahel countries, especially given the role Nigeria plays in ECOWAS, I think Nigeria should find a way of working with these countries, because it's in our favor, you know, for us to work with them, for us to talk to them, because like Idris rightly mentioned, the borders are so porous in the northwest and also in the northeast. You can secure your end of the border if the other side of the border is open, is porous. There's only so much that that you can do, but if you collaborate together, it's easy to deal with this situation. I think in the press release that the Nigerian military issued, where they announced the Lakurawa group, the one important thing that the soldier, the general, mentioned was that the Lakurawa group took advantage of the breakdown in relationship between Nigeria and Niger. You know, so that tells you that cross-border conflict should be dealt by cross-border cooperation between countries that are affected, you know, affected by this. So we may use military might to suppress them now, but the main reason first that brought them into the country, if we don't address those reasons, well, like I mentioned earlier, we'll just only be scratching the surface. You give it some years, give it a decade, give it half a decade or even more, these guys will come back, if not through this name or under the name Lakrawa, maybe with another different name or another different group entirely, coming to take advantage of the vulnerabilities that exist in the in rural communities.
Brilliant. Same question to you, Idris. How do you see this play now?
So I think Malik has said it all, but let me put it in another way. As this is just like the way Nigerian government is trying to curtail JAPA, and you know what we call JAPA, how you know the young people are busy leaving Nigeria to other countries. It's the same thing as terror. As long as you know the democracy we call, we are practicing, is not reflecting the interests of the masses, there is no way terrorism will stop in Nigeria. Let me tell you the reality. People are not joining terrorism because of religious ideology, because of the economic benefits. You become very powerful, you become strong in your community. Even those bandits, when you talk with them, they will tell you that because they have been abandoned, you know, a lot of injustice. You know, how will you just wake up one day and see somebody is driving like zero sky, living in a very good place, while you are in somewhere else, wallowing in an abject poverty, you know, battling your fellow masses over religion or over thing. People are illiterate, you know, ignorance, you know, issue of climate change, and a lot of other, you know, striking things that are happening at that region. As long as, you know, the governance, you know, refuse to address this issue, there is no way that can, you know, end this insurgency. Like Malik said, they can use military forces now to do whatsoever they want to do. But do believe me, I'm not even go to the prediction Malik did. In the next 1 year, 2 years, another insurgent group will resurface with different names. That is the reality. As I told you earlier, there are some others in those border communities. Nobody even know their names. People will keep coming because they know this is fertile ground for them to recruit. What government should do is to do more of non-kinetic approach to this thing. Address, you know, the push and pull factors of radicalization, violent extremism, unemployment, a lot of things government need to do. A lot. Politicians need to put their differences and address, you know, the issues in their various communities. I think that's what will work faster than any other thing. When it comes to the regional effort, Nigeria should put any differences that it has with, you know, Nigeria, or they just want to, you know, put smile on the faces of other countries, you know, that have issue with this, you know, and Francophone countries. Let them sit down, you know, with these African countries and understand the situation. If not, as long as they keep involving in this proxy war, you know, the terror groups might take over the region. That's the reality.
I agree with you both 100%. And I think this is coming in my work, tying up neatly in some of the works I've been doing myself. We, like Riley said, when they say it's only a foolish man that keeps doing something the same way and expects a different outcome. So as it stands, it does lose bleak if they continue the same response. So, but we owe it a duty to write, to say this untold stories and to do all this kind of public engagement to inform the right policies. And I hope they will listen to this to get to the right person. But yeah, gentlemen, it's been a very good time talking to you guys, and I'm gonna let you guys go now, and hope we can, like Riley said, do some more work to bring out not only awareness but also to help influence the right policy towards this. But thank you very much for joining me. I'm very, very grateful. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Dr. Michael. Thank you, Samuel. Thank you for having you guys.
Yeah, thanks, Idris. Nice to see you as well. Do take care.
Okay, thank you, Malik. Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you for tuning in today. This is an exciting episode. My good friends Idris Muhammad and Malik Samuel has provided a very deep deep analysis of the new terror group in Nigeria, the Lakurawa group, and other, you know, terrorist groups or insurgent groups in Nigeria, and provided a way forward to how we should respond to this. Thank you for joining us today. I invite you, as usual, to subscribe, like our channel, and join me next week for another exciting and inspiring episode. For now, take care of yourself and stay blessed.